I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. A ransomware attack on JPS, the world's largest meatpacking company, shut down 9 plants in the U.S. this week, disrupting meat supplies, reducing workers' hours, and raising consumer prices. The attack came on the heels of a ransomware attack on Colonial Pipeline that disrupted gas supplies along the East Coast. According to our guest, Nicole Perlroth, who covers cybersecurity and digital espionage for the New York Times, the FBI blames a Russian-based cyber criminal group called REVIL, which stands for Ransomware Evil, responsible for a number of these kinds of attacks. She writes that in recent weeks, cyber criminals have targeted the Irish National Health System, New York City, a minor league baseball team, and the Massachusetts Steamship Authority. Today in Radio Times, we talk about the rising cyber threat, the groups behind these ransomware attacks, how to combat them and protect ourselves from them, and whether it should be illegal to pay ransoms when attacked. Joining us are Melissa Hathaway. She is president of Hathaway Global Strategies. She led the cybersecurity effort in both the Obama and George W. Bush administrations. Melissa Hathaway, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And joining us by Skype is Nicole Perlroth. And as I said, she covers cybersecurity and digital espionage for the New York Times. Her book on the global cyber arms race, This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends, came out in February. Nicole Perlroth, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. Let's begin with REVIL. What is REVIL? What do we know about them?
Well, REVIL is one of the largest ransomware groups that we've faced. They go after large U.S. companies. They've also come for cities. They were responsible for a coordinated ransomware attack on some 23 cities in Texas back in 2019. They're known for making very high ransom demands. Sometimes $50 million is the highest I've seen. They actually just earlier this year hit one of Apple's suppliers in Taiwan and were able to get some of the schematics for Apple's latest product designs. And they ended up extorting Apple or trying to extort Apple for $50 million before giving up and putting some of their schematics online on the day of Apple's big product day. So they're very aggressive, I would say. We also know they're based in Russia. We know, like a lot of other ransomware groups, they screen for Russian computers. They also screen for computers in other post-Soviet states. And when they find them, they go around them. They don't infect them. They go out of their way not to infect them. So that pretty much sums it up. We also know that they're a ransomware as a service group, which means they lease out their ransomware to other groups, people who are not technically inept at all, or not technically adept at all, I should say, can use REVIL's service to ransomware other victims. So they've really lowered the barrier to entry. And actually, the group that held up Colonial Pipeline the other week, a group called DarkSide, we believe used to be an affiliate of REVIL and then split off and started their own ransomware as a service group. So you get a sense of how sophisticated this sort of back industry is for ransomware.
Melissa Hathaway, let me ask you, there's so many questions based on Nicole's response there. If they are based in Russia, are they working at the behest of the Russian government? Do we know?
We think that there are criminal syndicates and that there are some of these groups that are, in fact, working with the intelligence services of Russia. And Russia, as a government, generally will turn a blind eye to the operations that are happening out of Russian sovereign territory. And we think that we could expect a kickback going to government officials from the payments that are received by some of these syndicates.
Are we? This is to you, Melissa. Are we in the midst of some kind of a cyber war with some of these shadowy groups?
I think that we're certainly in a state of escalatory, events. And I honestly believe that some of the things that we've just seen with Colonial Pipeline and JBS are signals to the United States that we can, in fact, hold your key infrastructures hostage as we go into serious negotiations, right? Nord Stream 2 was on the line for Russia with the sanctions, and the administration just backed off on that. That very, like, within 2 days of the Colonial Pipeline, the JBS with disrupting the food supply in the United States and Australia, Canada, and elsewhere. Again, as a signal, you know, as we're going into negotiations in Geneva with the Russians, or open skies for the, you know, the nuclear talks. There's a lot of things on the line with Russia right now, and I think that Russia.
Oh dear, I'm afraid we have lost Melissa Hathaway. We will get her back on line with us. Nicole, let me turn to you. My understanding is that Colonial Pipeline did pay ransom. What do we know about that?
Yeah, we know that they ended up paying the ransom. It was something like $4.4 million in Bitcoin. We know actually it would have been significantly cheaper if they had paid 2 days later, because the price of Bitcoin had tanked just a couple of days later after Elon Musk appeared on Saturday Night Live, which is why I always say that the truth really is stranger than fiction. That's in this space. But, you know, what we know about Colonial Pipeline is that this group of hackers, DarkSide, held up their IT systems. They didn't come for the pipeline. But because Colonial Pipeline couldn't capture any billing information off of their gas outflows, it took the additional step of shutting down the pipeline itself. And actually, in reporting out that story, we got our hands on a classified government assessment that found that we could have actually, as a country, only have afforded 3 to 5 more days of downtime before the Colonial Pipeline shut down chemical refineries that require diesel, transportation systems. And so these are big deals. And I think if anything, the Colonial Pipeline attack actually did us a favor, because just having that visual of people panic buying at the pump, gas stations running out of gas, you know, block lines of cars lined up trying to get gas, is, I think, the visual that the American public and perhaps some in government needed to understand America's cyber vulnerability and just how vulnerable we are to these attacks. They don't have to come from a nation state itself. They can come from these lower level criminal syndicates.
And I want to pick up on that. Let me get Melissa Hathaway back in on our conversation. Nicole Perlweth was talking about the fact that Colonial used Bitcoin, and I wonder how much cryptocurrency is part of these ransomware, cyber criminal activity.
Yeah, almost all ransom demands are to be paid in a Bitcoin or some type of cryptocurrency. And the reason that they the syndicates or the malicious actors want to do that is it falls outside of our fraud and anti-fraud and money laundering laws. So it's easy to basically hide the financial transaction and then further launder it into real currency in the marketplace. And as Nicole said earlier, you know, the ransom demands are going up. They average right now around 50 million in Bitcoin and 50 million US dollars in Bitcoin, and then sometimes they get negotiated down. But that's a lot of money when you start to think about, you know, there's a ransomware event about every 20 seconds in the United States.
Interesting. But picking up also on what Nicole was describing with Colonial, and even if you don't, you know, believe in fossil fuels, nonetheless, that is what fuels so much of our country, that if you've got a system that's really in trouble, the clock is ticking on getting it back online. The pressure, Melissa Hathaway, to pay that ransom must be enormous.
Yeah, but I think that Colonial made the decision the very same day that they got knocked offline to pay the ransom. What's interesting about Colonial is that it was only $4.5 million, which is very unusual, because, you know, the DarkSide really did have Colonial and the East Coast of the United States. It could bring it to its knees, and we were within about 2 days of having a real financial an economic crisis in the United States. So they could have really demanded a much larger ransom, and I believe the Colonial would have paid it. So you have to wonder what was going on behind the scenes and how much U.S. government intervention there might have been with the Russian government at that time.
Do we know, Nicole, why the U.S. is so vulnerable, and are we more vulnerable than other countries?
We know that we're vulnerable because, one, we're so digitized here. You know, we've really bought into this Silicon Valley promise of a frictionless society. We're automating our agriculture systems, our water systems, our power systems, our electronic medical records, our medical devices, as quickly as we can. And in the process of doing that, we never stop to think that maybe we were creating the world's ripest attack surface. But that is what cyber criminals and our adversaries have seen. They've seen that we have systems of interest, that we haven't adequately secured them, that we're actually, you know, still doing, not even doing the bare minimum. We're not patching our systems when patches become available. We're not running our software updates. We're not using two-factor authentication or strong passwords. We're writing buggy software into our code. You know, the MO out here in Silicon Valley is still very much what Mark Zuckerberg said 10 years ago. It's move fast and break things. Get your software to market as quickly as possible before the competition, and you'll win, and you can work out the security glitches and bugs later. Well, the problem is that, you know, by the time you figure out those glitches, someone else has figured them out before you. And that's just the status of things right now. So until we start really dialing down on our software security and our software design and making sure that people are just doing the bare minimum, we'll just continue to see these ransomware attacks and worse.
Melissa, we're almost up, we've about a minute before our break here, but is it we just don't take this seriously enough, or we have not taken it seriously enough?
Yeah, I think that there's, I agree with Nicole, that it's we've allowed the ICT industry, the Silicon Valley, Seattle, to deliver us products that are actually faulty out of the box. And I look at it as Patch Tuesday leads to Vulnerable Wednesday. And so it is, it's, you know, field it fast and fix it later, and it'll be fixed every month, you know, or every quarter for the foreseeable future until you replace the product with another bad product. The second thing is that there are a lot of industries, especially in manufacturing, and I would venture to say this is probably JBS and some of the others, is that they're running unsupported software, legacy hardware, so because it's manufacturing, and so they're going to be forever vulnerable because they haven't thought about these commodities with the capital refresh. And so they're running really old things that are not supported that are going to be exploited by any of these malicious actors.
Well, we are talking about ransomware, cyber criminal activity. That's Melissa Hathaway, president of Hathaway Global Strategy. She led the cybersecurity effort in both the Obama and George W. Bush administrations. Nicole Perlroth covers cybersecurity and digital espionage for the New York Times. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Let me just recap here, especially if you are just joining us. Cyber crimes are on the increase. Last month, hackers used ransomware to hijack Colonial Pipeline's computer systems. And this week, JBS, the largest meat processor in the world, was cyber attacked, disrupting pork and poultry plants in the U.S., including a plant in suburban Philadelphia. Again, Nicole Perlroth covers cyber security as a journalist at the New York Times, wrote a book that came out earlier this year, This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends. Melissa Hathaway served in the Obama and Bush II administrations on cybersecurity matters and is president of Hathaway Global Strategies. Nicole, let me go back to you, just trying to connect the dots here. So you've got Colonial Pipelines, we've got JBS, we've got Massachusetts Steamship Authority. We've got a minor league baseball team. We've got a national healthcare system in Ireland. We've got New York City and other people and organizations that have been targeted. Is there a way to connect the dots to help us understand why these groups, individuals, and not others?
Well, the list, unfortunately, is much longer than you listed and I've covered in the New York Times, frankly. You know, just in the last 2 months, you mentioned some of them, but there was actually Scripps Medical Center in California was held hostage and I think is still picking up the wreckage. Honeywell was held hostage a couple of months ago. You mentioned universities. We've also seen wineries and breweries. And yes, the minor league baseball team, also an NBA basketball team, the Houston Rockets, have been held hostage. This is just in the last 2 months. So if there's any, you know, through line here, it's that these are American mainstays. These are critical infrastructure. And the through line is that we're all vulnerable. You know, they in some cases, these ransomware groups spray and pray. You know, they go scan the internet and see who's vulnerable and who they can get and who might pay these ransoms. And if they find a large organization that is likely to have insurance that will encourage them in many cases to pay these ransoms, because the cost of paying out these ransoms in some cases is still cheaper than the cost to rebuild all of their data and systems from scratch, you know, they'll go right ahead and hack them. So, you know, there is no, you know, pattern here other than most organizations are vulnerable. We're just starting to feel it more because they're coming for American mainstays like gas and beef and all of these industries we know and love and are critical right now.
Melissa Hathaway, President Biden said that the country would, quote, take decisive action. Are we helpless against these attacks?
I think there's a lot of things that need to be done. Corporations need to really try to address this risk as enterprise risk and buy down their technical debt from the systems that they're not patching and the segmentation of their networks that they need to do. I think the government, the U.S. government in particular, needs to take a much stronger position regarding the ransom activities. The position would be first, Department of Justice working with Congress should make paying the ransoms illegal. Second, Treasury should be working to bring either the cryptocurrency exchanges under the financial regulations that we treat all other banks and financial transactions, or start to work with our allies to shut down the cryptocurrency exchanges. Treasury should also add these ransom gangs and their affiliates to the special designated list, which basically would mean that we're going to treat them as more like terrorists and the like. And then I think that we need to be working with our allies to systematically dismantle their networks. There are a number of countries that these syndicates are operating out of, you know, whether it's Russia, China, Iran, but also Ukraine and Romania and Belarus. You know, we need to start working like we do for other criminal and illegal and illicit activities and start to break down those networks and hold them accountable.
Do we have the skills, the technology to dismantle those networks, to get inside them and do damage?
We definitely have the technology. We've been, if we start to look at this as a, you know, terrorist-like activity or anything else to elicit, you know, counter-drug, et cetera, we have a lot of muscle memory, all of us, not just the United States, but our allies, of how to detect and dismantle these types of networks.
That would require some cooperation around the world, correct?
Yes, but, you know, I think that we would have it. You know, Ireland's entire national health system is still down. Today in Japan, Fujifilm was brought down from ransomware. Yesterday in Martha's Vineyard, you know, is no longer running ferry service. You know, every day and within every hour, there's a country that's affected by one of these, you know, either the school, the hospital system, the major corporation that's being knocked offline that, you know, from these syndicates.
Let me go back to you, Nicole Perlroth, and just picking up on the idea of an entire healthcare system being down in Ireland. And I know healthcare systems have been targeted in this country. You wrote about one in Vermont, unable to provide care for some of its patients and the impact on the staff there.
Yeah, and let me just back up to one point you both made earlier. You know, there is actually right now a working group at the State Department. The State Department has set up this group with some 20 other countries to come up with a menu of potential responses to these attacks, and also to discuss at what threshold will we respond, because the status quo is obviously not working when ransomware attacks are bringing down critical industries every day. So that is in the process. And obviously, like a lot of things, it'll come down to execution. Otherwise, it'll just end up being this nice little bureaucratic exercise. But getting to your hospital or your question about hospitals, sure. You know, in the beginning, when we started seeing ransomware attacks on hospitals, usually would hold up the electronic medical records. And a lot of people think, well, you know, people can still be seen. They can still be treated. You know, even non-elective surgeries can go forward because it's, you know, whatever. But the problem is that this is actually much more serious than I think people realized when these first attacks came for our hospitals. And that's what we saw at the University of Vermont Medical Center when they held up not just electronic medical records, but the records of which chemo patients was owed which chemo protocol. Those are pretty complicated protocols. They can't just recreate those from memory. So we had a situation where cancer patients couldn't get their chemo treatments because of a ransomware attack. And when I spoke to the nurses in this ward at the University of Vermont Medical Center, what they said was, why aren't people screaming from the hills about this? You know, they said that this only compared to one other experience in their career, and that was working the burn unit after the Boston Marathon bombing. They said it was that destructive, and in many ways that traumatic. And, you know, what are we waiting for? Are we waiting for every hospital in the United States to have this experience before we start doing some of the things that Melissa just outlined? And, you know, hospitals are obviously the most critical victim here, but now we're seeing these ransomware attacks come for our gas and our food. So it's only going to get worse until we start coming up with new strategies.
And I do want to pick up on that. Let me just quickly reintroduce the both of you. That is Nicole Perlroth. She covers cybersecurity and digital espionage for the New York Times. And her book about the global cyber arms race is titled This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends. And it came out just a few months ago in February. Melissa Hathaway is president of Hathaway Global Strategies, and she led the cybersecurity effort in both the Obama and George W. Bush administrations. And we want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me read a couple of comments. One from Warren and Melissa Hathaway. I'll put it to you. He says, how can we make Bitcoin trackable? They always use that for ransom. I was a victim, but I did not pay. We have to find a way to follow the money. Would that be helpful? Is that doable?
Yeah, it's just forcing the cryptocurrency exchanges to operate in the financial transactions like banks. So, and there's some efforts and discussions by Bank of International Settlements and some of our central banks or the Federal Reserve here of how we should be addressing cryptocurrency and these central bank digital currencies. Digital currencies is the future for money, and digital, and then the cryptocurrencies are really aiding and abetting the criminal activity. So if we can bring the cryptocurrencies.
Oh, dear. We lost her again. We will get Melissa Hathaway back. Do you want to finish her thought there, Nicole Perlroth, the idea of figuring out how to trace some of this money?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is that we would enforce existing know thy customer laws with the cryptocurrency exchanges. So in essence, we would force them to collect some of their customers, identifying information before they can withdraw money or that kind of thing, or deposit money in these crypto exchanges. And I think that would go a long way. You know, I really do think that cryptocurrencies may be brought down by ransomware because the problem is getting so bad. This is really going to be their Achilles heel. And the idea is, you know, the reason ransomware is so bad right now, the reason we see such high ransom demands is because of cryptocurrencies and the anonymity that they give some of these actors and the ease with which that they can launder some of these funds through other cryptocurrencies. We actually now see some ransomware groups charge an extra 20% on top of their original ransom demand if someone pays in Bitcoin instead of paying in Monero, which they think of as a more anonymous cryptocurrency. So, you know, ransomware cyber criminals are really capitalizing on the anonymity of cryptocurrencies. And the best way to tackle that is to enforce these existing rules around Know Thy Customer.
Nicole, here's a tweet from Margot, who says the case of the pipeline being held hostage really should make the case for better battery technology, solar and wind, and seriously shrinking the grid. Is that an option? Is that on the table?
You know, I would love if that was the solution. I think there are a lot of people who drove electric cars who were sitting pretty a couple of weeks ago, and there are a lot of vegans who were sitting pretty this week with the ransomware attack on JBS. But no, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the solutions you hear with regard to climate change is to add more automation. And more automation means adding more complexity, and more complexity means creating more attack surfaces for bad actors. So this is a problem that I was actually hoping to write my book to get ahead of the Internet of Things, because we were all just moving so quickly to put Google Home and Alexa and Nest and you know, move to autonomous vehicles. But you know, we're past that now, and so now, you know, when I get this message out, I'm hoping it's ahead of AI, to the point where we're just moving to fully autonomous systems and machine learning, because we still haven't figured out the security of our analog systems, let alone trying to figure them out for our new brave AI world.
Absolutely. Melissa Hathaway, I believe we have you back, and I'm sorry we keep losing you, but glad that we have you back. Let me just put a comment from Steve. He wants to know, do these cyber attack events occur in Russia and China as well? Do you know the answer to that?
I do. I think that they, I know that China is also affected by some of these events, and so is Russia, when we've seen some of these, I would say, not just ransomware, but wiper, more destructive software that is released. But broadly, I don't think that they're suffering as much as the Western countries are from the ransomware events, and or South America or Japan. You know, the OECD countries are definitely affected more.
Nicole, let me go back to you. You wrote an interesting article not so long ago, actually looking at what happened. This feels almost like ancient history in 2016 when the Russians hacked the DNC. And then you looked ahead to 2020, and obviously not the same attacks. In fact, they were protected, allegedly, or I guess reportedly. What did the DNC do, and what could we learn from that?
That's a great question. I'm so glad you asked. So I have wanted to get to the bottom of this question because I was really worried going into 2020 that we would see a repeat of 2016. And the person I was desperate to speak to going into 2020 was Bob Lord, who was the chief information security officer at the DNC. He basically volunteered to take a pay cut from his job at Yahoo to go to the DNC and shore up their systems going into 2020. And he was so busy, he couldn't talk to me until last month. And when we spoke, what I took away was, it's not like he deployed some crazy expensive intrusion detection technology or AI advanced security solution. What he did was he got the DNC back to basics. I actually compare him to a digital Marie Kondo. You know, he basically went through the DNC's assets, found any old unsupported software, asked around to see if anyone owned or needed to use that software. And if they didn't, he ripped it out. You know, he took critical data and he moved it to the cloud with reputable cloud providers that he knew had the resources devoted to security and could do the sort of advanced monitoring for nation state attacks that, frankly, the DNC's budgets would not allow. But the biggest thing he did, and I went around and spoke to, you know, both the DNC's leadership and then, you know, people in their technology department. And what they said was that the biggest thing Bob Lord did going into 2020 was create a tremendous cultural shift where he effectively turned every single person working at the DNC and to a larger extent, some of the state party apparatus paranoid. You know, he would staple these checklists above the urinals and in the women's bathroom that said, you know, are you using two-factor authentication? Are you using different passwords? Are you running your phone software updates? Are you hiding your Venmo account transactions? The bare basics. And that is what has stuck with me, because unfortunately, it's fun to talk about all these higher up things about, you know, diplomacy and, you know, coordinating our allies and coming up with these ransomware policies. But unfortunately, until we're just doing the bare minimum to shore up our security, we'll continue to see ransomware attacks. So it's really important that we almost all go print out Bob Lord's checklist and put it above our own bathroom wall and make sure we're doing the bare basics, because they always say in security, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And unfortunately, it continues to be people and employees that are the weakest link.
Melissa Hathaway, we have to take a very short break. I want to get a response from you to that, some of that basic information there. The voice you just heard, Nicole Perlroth, again, covers cybersecurity and digital espionage for the New York Times. Melissa Hathaway is president of Hathaway Global Strategies, and she led the cybersecurity effort in both the Obama and George W. Bush administrations. We are talking about ransomware attacks. We are talking about cybersecurity, how to protect ourselves from these kinds of attacks. And again, you can join our conversation by sending us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Any questions or comments, you can always tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Melissa Hathaway, just picking up on what Nicole Perlroth was saying before the break about what the DNC learned about how to protect themselves from cyber attacks. Things like two-factor authentication, don't reuse passwords, don't check on suspicious links. Are there some basic things that we just need to be reminded of just to make sure that we can protect ourselves and, frankly, protect our workplace?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some, you know, the lock your Wi-Fi at your house like you lock your home or your car. You know, the back up your data often, because if you get, you know, if you have some issue and you can't bring it back up, your photos, your key documents, and the like, it's really important. Definitely the two-factor authentication. Use biometrics wherever possible, the fingerprint, or the facial scan, because those are very difficult to spoof. I think complex passwords are important, but passwords are passe. So it's better to be using the multi-factor authentication where you've got your username, you've got the token, you've got the biometric, and to get into and access to the network. I think it's also important as individuals and as companies is to start to do the regular search, the Google search, on what's out there in the public domain about you and your family. And you'd be surprised how much information is out there, and that could be used to profile yourself or your company, or gain access or guess your password. And then I think finally, the thing that all people should be doing is freeze your credit, because the credit out there, people are stealing your social security number. They've got your passwords. They can open up bank accounts with your social security number. And it's just better to, you know, protect your money wherever possible. Those would be my top five.
Sure. What do you mean by freeze your credit? What does that mean?
You go to the Experian or the four different credit bureaus, and you lock the ability for somebody to use your social security number, et cetera, and open basically a false account in within your with your credentials.
Another question to you, Melissa, and then we got a lot more comments. What would you like President Biden to say to Vladimir Putin when they meet in a couple of weeks?
Well, for this particular issue, I think that I would be pretty strong in asking, demanding that Putin start to shut down these ransomware networks that are operating out of his out of the country. And I would tell him that we're going to start to treat it as terrorists. And therefore, he's got a legal responsibility under international law to address it.
Is he likely to do that based on what you know about Putin?
I think that Putin has already tested the Biden administration and continues and will continue to test them to see if they're going to hold the line. So even if the president were to say that to the President Putin, I think that Putin would still test to see whether or not we're going to cross the red line or we're going to actually execute what we say we're going to do.
And Nicole, what is the White House saying about all of this?
You know, I think we do need to stop and just acknowledge that there was very little done to combat these threats over the previous 4 years. So this new administration has come in and has really been stuck holding the bag on nation state attacks and ransomware, and the number of attacks that we're unwinding right now on critical U.S. systems feels like it's more than ever, but really this is just the logical culmination of a country that really has not taken these threats seriously until now. So, you know, the good news is that because of these latest attacks, not just the ransomware attacks, but the SolarWinds attacks on our federal IT systems, this administration has been left with no choice but to take these threats very seriously. So I already mentioned, you know, one thing they're doing is at the State Department, they're working with our allies to come up with, you know, a threshold that we will no longer tolerate attacks above, and that's likely to be ransomware attacks on critical systems like gas pipelines, and then a menu of possible coordinated responses. We do have some terrific people in place to take over as our new national cyber director. One of them is Chris Inglis, who comes out of the NSA, but actually one of my favorite quotes in my book belongs to Chris Inglis, which is, if we were to score cyber the way that we score soccer, the score would be something like 452 to 469, 20 minutes into the game. In other words, all we've done is offense. We have no goalies, there's no defense, and now is the time to really hone in on defense. So we also know that the Justice Department has a new ransomware task force set up, and they're exploring things like enforcing Know Thy Customer rules on the cryptocurrency exchanges, like setting up a 311 number for ransomware attacks, like approaching the Russian safe harbor issue and considering things like limiting student or travel visas out of Russia until they take these threats more seriously. So all of these things are being considered, but I do think there's going to be some time before we actually see them execute on these things.
A follow-up to you, Melissa Hathaway. Is this a kind of asymmetrical warfare that we're dealing with, in that it's probably cheap to attack, but it's more expensive to defend? Does that describe in part what we're dealing with?
For sure. Absolutely. All they have to do is find the weakest link or the one unpatched system, and I can cause a lot of harm. And it is expensive to really raise your defenses, especially after the fact that we haven't really invested in the defenses and or the enterprise risk management processes that are needed to manage this risk for the last 20 years. And now, because companies and critical services and infrastructures are so digitized and so vulnerable, it's time that we start to address the, you know, how do you put the basic measures in place?
Here's a comment from Thomas. Couldn't you argue that these smaller scale ransomware attacks are actually a useful motivation to increase cybersecurity? Without the criminal attacks raising awareness, it seems like we'd be even more vulnerable to something even more nasty like a nation state level attack. Melissa Hathaway, I'm going to toss that back to you. What do you think?
I definitely think that, you know, some of these ransomware gangs are acting as proxies of nation states. So they are signaling that and showing how vulnerable these critical infrastructures and services are. Unfortunately, though, because we want our services back up and running, like oil and gas through the pipeline or, you know, the burgers moving to McDonald's, we are, in fact, seeing these companies pay because it'll take the average organization, if they're rebuilding from backup or backup tapes, it takes a minimum of 19 days. But the insurance companies would tell you it takes almost 3 to 6 months. So you can't be in a degraded service for that long. So the, you know, then you're forced to pay in order to get the services back on. So we're in this sort of a conundrum or the catch 22. Right. We're super vulnerable and it's being exploited.
You mentioned earlier the idea of making it illegal to pay so that if you pay, you're going to pay for that, right?
Yeah, Garmin was a really good example. Garmin actually did pay their ransom, and it was to a gang that was on or, you know, designated on the designated list for Treasury Department, so basically paying the terrorists. And Treasury has the ability to levy now a fine against the company, and there are other penalties associated with it. It'll be difficult because we have to start to really invest in our ability to recover quickly. What's your mean time to recover if you had to do this? At the same time of increasing the number of people on the list to pay or to increasing making ransoms illegal.
Here's a couple more comments. I'll put this to you, Nicole. A comment from George. To what extent will complete backups protect you from losing everything in a ransomware attack? Can you answer that question?
Well, actually, it's a timely one because JBS, the meat processor that was just held hostage this week, has said that it actually its backup systems weren't affected and that it did do regular backups. So, you know, we're potentially looking at a situation, and we don't know the full picture yet, where the company was prepared for this kind of attack, but it still takes time to migrate that data from their backup systems to their core systems. And that's why you're seeing this downtime in some of these plant shutdowns. But, you know, it could have been significantly longer if they didn't have those backup systems in place. But just to address something your previous caller said, you know, whether ransomware is in effect doing us a favor by drawing attention to these attacks, I do think it is. You know, the benefit of ransomware attacks is that they're really hard to hide. You know, they freeze up your systems. And the other thing is that ransomware groups aren't just holding data hostage anymore. They're leaking it online. So all of a sudden, we're getting a very good visual of just how prolific these ransomware attacks are. But ransomware is really just the tip of the iceberg. Below the surface are all of these attacks, nation state attacks on American companies that we've had for the past decade that companies either didn't realize they were hacked or tried to bury the breaches. And so that is actually true, that ransomware is doing us a favor and that it's opening up people's eyes to just how pervasive cyber threats are.
Here's a question for you, Melissa Hathaway, from Jerry. He says, why are we not going on the offense to attack these groups? And are we maybe, but we don't know about it?
I think that there's definitely some... The ransomware group that took a Colonial Pipeline offline was knocked offline by... an undescribed group, whether it was the Russian government, the U.S. government, some other allies. So they are being, we are beginning to conduct some offensive or take down these groups. In the United States, we also, for Colonial Pipeline, we worked with one of the internet service providers to seize the servers where they had moved all of the proprietary information for Colonial Pipeline. So you're starting to see some of those I would have quote unquote more offensive or actions against them.
Melissa, another question. This one from Laura. Does a VPN help to curb these kinds of attacks?
A VPN is one of the important areas for you to gain access into your enterprise, but it really, what's the two main lines of what's happening for ransomware is either one of your employees clicked on the wrong link and basically was able to get malicious software downloaded to your enterprise, or two, your enterprise is not up to date with its patches of all of its software, where Microsoft is the leading vulnerability that's being exploited.
Nicole, let me turn to you. And actually, the last time you were on the show, it was about solar winds. It was this past winter. Got inside, I think, several hundred government agencies, a number of businesses. What is the latest on that? And apparently, this was going on for some time and unbeknownst to some of these groups.
Well, just to correct one thing, they hit hundreds of companies, and then we know of at least seven government agencies. Okay. So the latest is that we know who did it, which was the SVR, Russia's premier intelligence agency. We talked about them last time a little bit. They're known as more of a traditional espionage actor that's not out there to do destruction, but is there to, you know, collect emails and strategy planning documents and that kind of thing. But they're also famously hard to eradicate. And, you know, when they hacked the State Department and the White House a few years ago, those on the ground who were remediating from that attack described the process of kicking them out as hand-to-hand digital combat.
Wow.
And when you speak to government officials right now, they'll quietly concede that they don't think that they have successfully kicked the SVR out of these systems because they are so good at laying more backdoors that are hard to detect. And once they've gotten this access, it can be very hard to kick them out, and it could be another number of months or even years before we can confidently say that we have kicked them out. The latest thing is that the SVR showed up in another attack. This time they took over some accounts associated with an email vendor used by USAID, and they sent out emails containing malware links to organizations that have been critical of Vladimir Putin or have called out Russian disinformation campaigns on social media, organizations like the Atlantic Council and the EU Disinfo Lab were targeted in this latest attack. And one of the things that was notable about the attack was just how aggressive it was. You know, they blasted something like 3,000 emails out last Tuesday to people at 150 organizations. And you know, on one level, that is not as serious as SolarWinds, because the issue with SolarWinds was that they really put the trust in our software supply chain in doubt. This was more of a, you know, aggressive phishing campaign. But, you know, it just shows that for whatever reason, you know, whatever we've done so far to try to deter another SolarWinds from happening isn't quite, you know, enough or sufficient to stop them from doing something like they did last week with these phishing emails.
Well, we have to leave it there. Nicole Perlroth, thank you for joining us once again on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And she joined us by Skype, and she covers cybersecurity and digital espionage for the New York Times. And again, her book, This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends, came out in February. It's about the global cyber arms race. Melissa Hathaway, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
It was great to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And she led the cybersecurity effort in both the Obama and George W. Bush administrations, currently president of Hathaway Global Strategies. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, and you can also find us on Facebook and carry on a conversation there. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, Kelsey Hansen, and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscowain. Thank you for joining us.